Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a topic many investors find, well, pretty daunting: bear markets.
Definitely a challenge.
You, the learner, sent in Harry D. Schultz's Bear Market Investing Strategies. It's from 2002. Our mission today is to really pull out the key insights on how to, you know, not just survive these downturns,
but maybe even find some opportunities.
Exactly. We want to move beyond that simple advice you always hear, like just buy and hold or ride it out. We're going much deeper.
Yeah, and this book, it's part of the Wiley Trading Series, and it comes from someone with a lot of experience. Schultz, he'd been writing his investment newsletter for nearly 40 years when he wrote this.
Wow, four decades.
Yeah. And importantly, he was writing right after the dot-com bubble burst. The early 2000s bear market was just getting started.
So, real-time perspective.
Definitely. And he's quite critical of, well, the growing reliance on automated trading software, which is even more relevant today, right?
Absolutely.
And also how financial news was becoming more like entertainment than serious information.
That sounds familiar, too.
His main point, really, is that market analysis, it's more art than science. You can't just expect past patterns to repeat exactly.
Okay, so let's get right into it then. What does Schultz actually say a bear market is? And how does it mess with our heads?
Well, he describes it as more than just a quick dip. It's a, you know, a multi-year setback in that long-term upward march of societies.
A recalibration, maybe?
Sort of, yeah. And he makes an interesting distinction. He says the real bears, the ones who understand it, are often former bulls who've just become realists. They get that declines happen, they're part of the cycle, even if they hurt.
That's a key insight. It's about psychology, isn't it?
Hugely.
Yeah.
Schultz argues that the really long bull market, from like 82 to 2000.
Which everyone remembers.
Right. It created a whole lot of permanent bulls. People just got used to things always going up.
Anchored to that idea.
Exactly. Anchoring bias. They found it really hard to see downturns as anything more than, you know, quick corrections, little blips.
And that makes it hard to react properly.
Totally. Schultz really emphasizes that the winners are the flexible realists, the ones who can actually shift their view, be bullish, be bearish as the market changes.
And being inflexible, that costs money, right?
Oh, definitely. Schultz points out how the average person often gets in late near the top.
It buys high.
And then sells much later after the fall, locking in those losses.
Painful.
He tells this story, it's quite striking, of a doctor after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, who was so shaken up, he just couldn't bring himself to even look at his portfolio for weeks.
Wow. That's inertia, right? Emotional paralysis.
Exactly. At the worst possible time.
And this ties into what you said about financial media.
It does. Schultz was really critical of that shift towards entertainment he saw back then.
Less substance, more fluff.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
He felt commentators often had reasons to keep things sounding positive.
Yeah.
Regardless of the actual economic picture.
Keeps people invested, keeps the business going.
Right. And that constant positive spin just reinforces that permanent bull thinking. Makes it harder to spot the real warning signs.
He even says the language changes.
Yeah. Like market jargon gets twisted to reassure everyone, don't worry, the bull market's coming right back.
So against that background, this kind of ingrained optimism, maybe misleading info, Schultz starts questioning some real sacred cows, like buy and hold.
He really does. He argues its amazing track record was mostly just a feature of that specific time after 1982.
So not a timeless truth.
Not according to him. He points to history like Joseph Kennedy.
The famous one?
Yeah, who made money short selling back in the 1929 crash.
Yeah.
Or others who just saw the signs and got out beforehand.
Which brings us to short selling. That's often seen negatively, isn't it?
Very much so. And Schultz tackles that head on, the idea that it's like unpatriotic or something.
How does he counter that?
He reframes it. He says it's basically just one investor betting against another investor's opinion about a stock's value. It's not betting against the company itself, really.
Just a difference of opinion on price.
Exactly. And he argues, look, the SEC allows it. Solvent citizens, even if they profit when others lose, are good for a free society. They provide liquidity, different perspectives.
Makes sense. He also didn't like emotionally driven advice, right? You mentioned the post 9/11 commentators.
Yeah, telling everyone just hold on without much analysis.
Yeah.
And he criticizes what he calls lazy thinking.
Lazy thinking? What's that?
It's this tendency, maybe helped by computers back then, to just draw superficial comparisons.
Yeah.
Like saying, oh, this looks like 1987 or this looks like 1929, just based on numbers.
Without the context.
Right. Without thinking about the huge cultural, political, technological differences.
Mm-hmm.
He points out how the Fed slashed rates after 2000.
Trying to stimulate things.
but it didn't cause the quick V-shaped recovery like after the 87 crash, because the situation was different. Simple models didn't work.
So you need a more critical approach.
That's his whole point. Think deeper. Don't rely on simplistic rules or comparisons.
And to show how different bear markets can be, he gives some historical examples.
He does, yeah. Just quickly runs through a few to show the variety. 1900, down almost 32%, took about a year. 1907, much sharper, 45% drop in just 10 months. That was the panic of 1907, had two crash phases.
Okay.
Then you had the really long slog, 1941-42, down for like 71 months straight, maybe even two bears back to back.
Wow, nearly 6 years.
Yeah. Then 1946, down about 25%, but then went sideways for almost 3 years. 1981 led to a bad recession. And then 87.
The big one, Black Monday.
Right. Down 36% in less than 2 months. And that was the first truly global simultaneous crash driven by computer trading, portfolio insurance, all that.
So the takeaway is they're all different beasts.
Exactly. Duration, severity, causes vary wildly. Using history is vital, but not for simple copy-paste predictions. That understanding helps frame the indicators he looks at.
Okay, let's talk indicators. What signs does Schultz say might warn us that a bull market is running out of gas?
He lists several. A key one is when investor sentiment stays really bullish,
yeah,
really optimistic.
And everyone's still happy.
Even while the actual economy is starting to weaken underneath, that disconnect is a big red flag.
Perception versus reality.
Precisely. Then there's P.E. ratios, price to earnings. When they get way out of whack with historical averages.
Like you mentioned earlier, 25, 35 versus maybe 13 historically.
Yeah, that kind of detachment suggests things might be seriously overvalued.
Frothy.
Another worrying sign. The Fed cuts interest rates aggressively, tries to pump things up.
Standard procedure.
But the market just doesn't respond. It shrugs it off. That suggests the problems are maybe deeper than monetary policy can easily fix.
Okay, that makes sense. Any others?
Yeah. Consumer and investor confidence staying high even after the market's already started turning down. That denial factor again.
Stubborn optimism.
Right. Also, market action showing churning. Lots of shares trading hands, high volume, but prices aren't really going anywhere. Just volatile spinning.
Indicating indecision or distribution.
Could be. And then near unanimity. When literally everyone, business leaders, brokers, the media is bullish. That extreme consensus can be a contrary signal.
When everyone agrees, be worried.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, a sharp rise in debt, consumer debt, corporate debt, bankruptcies, mortgage problems. That leverage makes the system fragile.
Okay, so that's a pretty comprehensive list of potential warning signs. He also talks about fads, right? As indicators.
He does. Those classic bubbles. It's fascinating.
Like the tulip mania.
Exactly. 17th century Netherlands, then the Florida land craze in the 1920s, investment trusts, which were like early mutual funds right before the 29 crash.
History repeating, sort of.
Or rhyming, at least. Late 60s electronics companies, late 90s dot-coms.
The pattern seems to be
that these things often pop up around some amazing new technology or financial innovation.
Right. The excitement takes over.
Yeah. People get so captivated by the potential, they just forget basic business sense.
Right.
Is this company actually viable? Are the valuations sane? Doesn't matter. It's the future.
Until it isn't. He also mentions phases of a bear market. From Robert Rea.
Yeah, Rea's three phases. Phase one is the smart money, the informed investors starting to sell. Quietly, maybe.
Phase two.
That's when the public starts getting nervous. Selling becomes more widespread, but hesitant. People losing faith.
And phase three.
The panic. Climax selling. Everyone rushing for the exits. Understanding these phases might help you, you know, orient yourself during a downturn.
And within those phases, you get rallies, right? Bear market rallies.
Yes. Secondary reactions.
Yeah.
Those upward bounces against the main downward trend.
Opportunities.
Schultz says yes. Opportunities to maybe sell positions you wanted to get out of, lighten up, or even initiate shorts.
But there are traps, too.
Oh, yeah. He specifically warns about dullness after a rally peaks. If trading just goes quiet and drifts after a bounce, that can be a sign the main downtrend's about to kick back in. It's the opposite of the never sell a dull market idea in a bull market.
Interesting distinction.
He even shares a story about Robert Rea himself.
The guy with the phases.
Yeah. In a rally during the 1930 bear market, Rea apparently panicked and covered his shorts, took a loss.
Even though his analysis said it was just a temporary rally?
Right. Even though he expected it to fall further later. Shows how powerful emotions can be, even for the experts.
A good lesson. This leads into technical analysis, doesn't it? Tools and charts.
It does. But Schultz is careful here. He offers some big caveats.
Like what?
His main point is, tools support your judgment, they don't replace it. He actually values gut feel, intuition built from experience.
So don't just follow the signals blindly.
No, stick with tried and true tools, he advises. Really learn how your chosen tools behave in different markets. Don't just jump on every new indicator that comes along.
Makes sense. What kind of tools does he discuss?
Oh, he covers a lot. Things like new highs versus new lows, often using a moving average.
Okay.
Odd lot trading, what small investors are doing. That's often a contrarian indicator. Both are buying, selling, and they're short selling.
So do the opposite of the little guy. Sometimes.
That's the theory. Volume analysis is huge. He mentions Granville and Gartley, big names in technical analysis, and their views on volume patterns in bear markets.
High volume on a down day is bad. Low volume.
Low volume on an initial decline can be bearish, yeah. High volume can signal a selling climax near a bottom, though. It's nuanced.
What else? Moving averages.
Yep. The 30-week moving average, the 200-day moving average for the DJIA key long-term trend indicators. Price below means likely bear. Price above, likely bull, generally speaking.
Overbought, oversold indicators.
Those too, though he warns that extreme readings alone can be misleading. The advanced decline line tracking the number of stocks rising versus falling.
Breadth indicators.
Right. The debit balances index reflecting margin debt used by supposedly shrewder traders. Various NASDAQ indicators watching for divergence between NASDAQ and the Dow. Leadership index, percent of advances. It's a toolkit.
It sounds like a lot to track.
It is. But his crucial warning, again, is don't just take someone else's word for what these indicators mean.
Do your own homework.
Exactly. Understand why the tool works. Do your own analysis. And don't act unless the weight of the evidence from your indicators is really strongly pointing in one direction.
Okay. Now, let's circle back to short selling, a strategy he seems to think is important in bear markets.
Definitely. He spends quite a bit of time on it. We touched on the definition selling borrowed stock, hoping to buy it back cheaper.
And his defense against the unpatriotic label.
Right. He frames it as a way to profit when things go down, which is valid, and it adds liquidity. Even mentions historical pushback against it.
It wasn't always accepted.
No, but eventually it was. He cites the NYSE president back in 1914 defending short interest, saying it could actually act as a cushion, preventing markets from just collapsing instantly.
Interesting perspective. Does short interest behave differently in bear markets?
Schultz thinks so. He says shorts might be less eager to cover their positions quickly compared to bull market corrections. And he warns amateurs not to just assume a rise in short interest is bullish. It might just mean more people think the stock is going down.
Anything practical on placing short orders?
He generally recommends using limit orders, partly because of the uptick rule. Back then, you usually had a short at a price higher than the last trade, so limits gave more control.
And he acknowledges it's not a popular strategy. Socially.
Yeah, he says successful bears often face dislike because, well, other people are losing money. It's human nature, perhaps.
Yeah.
But his argument is firm. It's a legitimate part of a functioning market.
Okay, so beyond shorting, he talks about making money even if you're wrong about the market's direction. How does that work?
It boils down to tactics, specifically knowing when to get out, selling longs that aren't working, covering shorts that are going against you. Damage control.
Stop losses are key then.
Absolutely. He outlines a simple method. Mm-hmm. Focus on high volume stocks, clear trend lines, maybe stick to one stock to really learn his behavior. Use stop losses, adjust them as the trend moves.
And trade with the trend.
Yes. Short in a downtrend, be long in an uptrend. And the absolute key, cut your losses quickly. Don't let them snowball.
Easier said than done, often.
Totally. Which is why he stresses getting rid of pride. Admit you're wrong, reverse course if needed. Don't hang on just because you don't want to admit a mistake.
He even suggests keeping quiet about your positions.
Yeah, partly so you don't lose face if you have to change your mind quickly. Less external pressure.
It sounds like he's advocating for a very active, flexible approach.
Definitely. He calls it flexible investing. Adapting to the faster, more volatile markets driven by global money flows,
yeah.
Derivatives. You need more of a trader's mentality.
Meaning?
Being pliable, alert, willing to take smaller, shorter-term profits sometimes, not just holding out for the home run.
And that core selling rule.
Sell immediately if a stock you bought falls. If it goes up, have a target, or sell if it starts to fall back and threatens your profit. The golden rule. Never let a profit turn into a loss.
And take responsibility.
Yes. Blame yourself for losses, not the market, not your broker, not bad luck. Learning to win means learning when to sell or hedge.
This really contrasts with buy and hold, doesn't it?
Completely. It aligns with being that flexible realist. And he says, in a bear market, this focus on protecting capital, it should be the goal for everyone, whether you think of yourself as long-term, medium-term, or short-term. Job one is survival.
So preserving capital, how does the economic environment fit in? Inflation, deflation.
That's crucial. Your strategy needs to adapt. In deflation falling prices, cash is king. High-grade bonds too. Safety and liquidity. And inflation, rising prices.
And you think about assets that hold value, maybe strong foreign currency bonds like Swiss francs or German marks back in the 70s, gold, definitely. Real estate too, potentially.
But with a warning for bear markets.
Yeah, he advises liquidating investment properties. Why? Because buyers might disappear, rents could fall. Maybe keep your own home for, you know, emotional stability, but be wary of illiquid assets.
He also mentions global risks.
Right, citing a 1930 Austrian bank collapse to show how interconnected things are. Trouble in one place can spread. Very relevant today.
And gold. He sees it as a hedge. A hedge against government actions, inflation. He knows governments might try to keep the price down, but if those efforts fail, it could really take off.
Okay, now on to something critical. Emotions.
Yeah, he calls emotions the enemy. The ebullience, the euphoria in bull markets.
And the fear in bear markets.
Exactly. Both lead to bad decisions. He brings up that Rothschild quote, buy when there's blood in the streets.
Takes courage, right?
Definitely. Acting against the panic.
And he makes a great point. Systems can look perfect on paper, back-tested, whatever. But when your real money is on the line, emotions kick in, and suddenly the system doesn't work because you don't follow it.
We think we're rational, but...
You think the public is irrational, but we're not part of the public, right? Big mistake. Emotionally backed decisions are usually bad ones.
So how do you manage it?
He suggests being contrary as a default. Automatically reject the common view, then study it calmly, objectively.
Develop intuition, that gut feel he mentioned. Yes, through experience, like manual charting, getting a real feel for market action. But, and this is a key, learn to tell the difference between genuine intuition and just wishful thinking, emotional desire.
Know thyself.
Pretty much. Factor your own emotional tendencies into your plan instead of pretending they don't exist. And, crucially, if you're going through major personal stuff, maybe just step out of the market altogether for a while. Too much risk.
That's sound advice. He quotes Graham and Dodd, too.
Yeah, the market being a voting machine, short-term, emotional, but a weighing machine, long-term, rational, captures that duality.
This leads right into a deeper look at contrary opinion.
Which he thinks is more important now, or back in 2002, because of media concentration and mass communication amplifying trends.
So it's not just being disagreeable.
No, not just contradicting everything. It's about recognizing when the majority view hardens into dogma, becomes unquestioned wisdom, and often starts being wrong.
When everyone's on the same side of the boat.
Exactly. He says experienced traders often head for the exit when the crowd finally piles in, because usually by then, all the good reasons are already obvious and priced in.
Modern media makes the swings worse.
He argues it amplifies the extremes, the euphoria and the panic. He points to the late 1920s as a classic example of being disastrously wrong, along with the majority.
So apply this thinking broadly.
Yes. Be skeptical. Question leaders. Question journalists. Ask.
Yeah.
What's their angle? What's their bias? It's hard work thinking independently.
But it's essential for survival.
And prosperity, he argues. Contrary thinking is linked to freedom of thought. Just be careful not to confuse the real majority view with your own tendency to just want to be different.
Good point. Finally, he looks at the past as prologue. Context for the future.
Yeah, but stressing this isn't about short-term predictions. It's about building perspective.
What parallels did he see back then around 2002?
He saw strong parallels between the 1920s and the 1990s bubbles. Ignoring economics for easy money, believing tech meant permanent prosperity, even with weak fundamentals and crazy prices. Sound familiar?
Very. Did he think 2000 onwards would be like 1929, 32?
Unlikely to be an exact repeat, he thought, mainly because governments would react differently. He actually argues Hoover's interventions made the Depression worse.
Interesting. Different eras, different moods, too.
Yeah, he contrasts the post-WWII optimism, born from sacrifice and rebuilding, with what he saw as more of a post-Cold War sense of entitlement, potentially fueling irrational exuberance.
Technology cycles.
Right, like the 60s electronics transistor boom leading to hype and crashes, similar to the dot-coms. He compared the late 60s environment to early 2002 Fed pumping liquidity in both cases.
But different sentiment.
Yeah, consumer sentiment was much more subdued in 02. partly due to 9/11.
So the future wouldn't be a carbon copy of the 30s or 70s.
No, but similarities would exist. He noted the public burned in the 20s didn't rush back in the 30s. Yet there was a big bull market from 32 to 37, just without the 20s froth.
And his outlook for the early 2000s recovery.
He thought the damage to the economy meant no quick V-bottom bounce back was likely. More of a slog.
Inflation outlook.
Potential for moderate inflation, but big inflation would need something unexpected. Though renewed consumer confidence could push prices up quickly.
And the wild card?
The war on terrorism's impact on risk appetite. He felt a clear resolution was needed for real irrational exuberance to return.
And his final piece of advice?
Simple and timeless. When in doubt, get out. Preserve capital.
Okay. So let's try to wrap this up. Key insights from Schultz. It really seems like navigating bear markets requires a huge mental shift, right? From that permanent bull optimism to being a flexible realist.
Absolutely. Because adaptability is paramount. And using history not as a roadmap, but for context, understanding that each downturn is unique.
And developing your own judgment. Using technical tools as aids, not crutches.
Right. Doing your own thinking, not just following the herd or some guru.
We also hit hard on the dangers of emotion in investing. Fear and greed messing things up.
Definitely. And the potential place for strategies like short selling. And it's a big if you use them with discipline and understand the risks.
So for you, the learner, hopefully this deep dive gives you a much more structured way to think about bear markets. It's not just about hunkering down.
Yeah, hopefully it's a shortcut to understanding the dynamics, the psychology, the potential strategies, even the surprising ones. Remember that core idea. Be flexible. Be realistic. Keep learning.
There's obviously so much more depth here. We really encourage you to maybe revisit some of these ideas from Schultz. Think about how they might apply now or in the future.
What resonated? What questions does this raise for you personally? Consider this a starting point for your own investigation into handling market downturns.
Exactly. Maybe the provocative thought to leave you with is this. Given how much Schultz emphasized psychology and contrarianism back in 2002, how much more important might those factors be today in our even faster, more connected, and arguably more sentiment-driven market environment? Something to think about.